I'm Jeremy Meeks.
I'm David Helm.
I'm K. Edward Copeland.
And this is Preacher's Talk, a podcast for preachers. And Dave,
those who love preaching,
oh,
brought to you
so
by
good.
Charles Simeon Trust and Nine Marks, helping you prepare messages better and build churches with greater health.
Wow. That was so good.
That was like one of my sermons. I mean, it started out really good. Yeah,
it was crushing them for a second.
Get out! Get out!
Yeah.
He's tanking!
That's right. Pull the ripcord. Hey, listen, that's right. That's what we do. And you can write us a feedback at preacherstalk.org and leave us a comment, ask us a question. Actually, today we're going to dive into the mailbag. I've got lots of questions, lots of these kind of just, okay, that's not quite an episode question. You guys have no clue what's on this page. I have not briefed you at all. So we're just getting your hot takes about questions that preachers have got about preaching. So let's just start off with this. How artful, you know, catchy, alliterated, etc., should your title and outline be, Ed?
Thank goodness he asked you first. I just bought me like 40 seconds.
That's right.
So it should be only as artful as is useful to the audience that you are speaking. Mm. So what I mean by that is, if I was speaking to businessmen,
yep,
versus speaking to the primary boys Sunday school class, the artfulness is going to be calibrated to my audience and the time that I have available with that audience. So if I got an hour with some teenagers, I might try to be a little more artful just for the sake of their memory. But if I'm dealing with some busy businessmen and I only have 15, 20 minutes,
yep,
I'm going to try to be as direct as possible and not worry about alliteration and all those types of things.
Okay.
Yeah. And artful is a good word. I like that word,
yep,
as opposed to cute, clever, humorous.
Yeah.
So artful is a better word because you're fashioning something. I'm getting ready to create something and I'm looking for words, concrete language that holds that,
yeah,
which is being created and argued here.
That's it.
Right.
And so that's a good thing. So you should take care. This is important.
Yeah.
As long as you know what it is you're trying to do.
That's the
right
point. If I could say something like, while you were talking, you struck me that we're trying to make it appetizing to the hearer. We're not, yeah, trying to make the hearer think highly of me.
Yeah. No, that's right. And sometimes I take care on the artful side because I'm not preaching from a manuscript.
Right.
So I need those hangers, simply put, mm-hmm, firmly in my mind in ways that I can remember them and
right,
they're grouped. So I can see where it would also be helpful to you as a preacher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm often asking the question when somebody asks this question, well, why are you asking the question? Hmm. Right? Like, why are you concerned about artfulness?
Yeah.
Is it because you're concerned you are too artful? Most of the time, guys in our circles are like, well, I'm suspicious of artistry. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, why do you always talk about how beautiful Paul's words are, right? Like,
right,
okay, right. I get it. Like, but so I would say you need to be as artful as your audience. You need to moderate your artistry, but also you need to be as, like, it depends on who you are.
Yeah.
Like, what artistry looks like for Dave and for you, Ed, is going to be different.
That's true.
But, like, we are word people.
Yeah, we're word people.
Right.
Not
but,
just Bible people.
But we're not here to be witty.
Exactly. We're not
right
here to be, well, yeah, depending on what you mean by that. Yeah, we're not here to be witty, right? So we're not here just like to make jokes or whatever, right? So I think that the thing is, we're wordsmiths as well. Like,
yeah,
you should, if you don't love language, I don't know what you're doing getting paid to speak out loud in public.
Yeah. That's
right?
True.
So like, it's not about being flashy or just like one kind of person or whatever. But it's like, love language.
Yeah,
God has
great
decided to communicate through language.
And
so
sometimes, to your point, sometimes your artfulness, if I heard you correctly, is sort of a reflection of your personality.
Yeah.
So if you speak a certain way just in general,
right,
I don't know that you should discount that when you get to the pulpit because
right,
your personality is what God wants to use.
Yep.
Right.
All right. Okay. So I'm sure you've run into this. Dave, you're preaching a text,
Lord,
that someone
me
else
Lord
has
me
done before in
me
a way you can't unsee. You can't unhear. Right? Do you try to ignore it? Do you admit it and use it? Or do you just say, like, I'm just going to preach that sermon?
Well, so someone's preached the text and it's just laid out there so clean.
Yeah, that, it like either haunts your memory or you just
yeah
heard it.
So when I started preaching, I was exposing myself in the New Testament a lot to John Stott's commentaries, which were homiletical in nature.
Yep.
I got to a point where I couldn't look at that stuff until I had already decided on what I was doing. Because when I did look at it, it was so clean, so crisp, so clear. I'm like, well, I might as well just use that. So I guess I think it's not a bad thing necessarily to go ahead and preach. I mean, if the divisions of the text, if the headers are there, you'll probably shift them around a little bit.
Yeah.
But you want to do your own work and not be subject to their work. Their work should serve yours.
Yep.
You're not trying to serve them or replicate them.
Okay. Ed?
So in addition to what he just said, there's been times where, not because I saw it in a commentary, but just I heard a sermon and it was just so impactful. I might make reference to, and I've done this a couple of times, that, hey, I heard Reverend so-and-so preach a sermon and he used this, blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to use that same sort of framework, but here's what I'm going to say about it. And I've had, even last week, a very well-known pastor call me and say, Pastor, you remember that sermon you preached on such, such, such? Yeah, I remember. Do you mind if I use that outline? Yeah.
Right, right.
Because the outline, from that person's perspective, just happened to be so clean.
Right.
So I think that if you're going to use it without, if something has impacted you so much that you want to use it freely,
yeah,
I think you should at least give credit.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I've
for
done
sure.
that and said, hey, this outline came from so and so, so and so.
Yep.
Because I heard this sermon and it stuck with me. But you still have to do your work.
Yeah,
it just right. might be the turn of phrase they used or whatever might have just been so helpful
yep.
that you can't improve on it.
Yeah.
And I think that this is the thing, like, you didn't go looking for that.
No,
right?
No.
Now that this other guy go looking for your stuff. It was just like, man, I was so thankful having heard that. And I think that there it can be a beneficial thing where you're like, you know what? So-and-so preacher friend of mine said this so well. I asked him and I'm going to take it because I don't know a better way to put it. It can actually show like humility in the preacher and yeah. honor towards another preacher. But it's a very different thing than just going and searching for something, being like, oh, who's got the best words
right,
on this?
Right.
right. Okay, great. You know, Dave, you brought up commentaries. So let me ask you this question. We get it all kinds of ways. You know, I find myself relying too much on commentaries. What disciplines should I shore up so that I'm making proper use of commentaries rather than using them as a crutch?
Okay, so I rely too much on commentaries. It's kind of like, you know, I need to lose weight. Well, it's pretty simple. You got to eat less, right?
So, come back for our next podcast.
It's all math, right?
Right.
So if you're relying too much on commentaries, then keep those boys on the shelf and don't let them open their mouths for a while. I mean, why not go 4 consecutive weeks without appealing to a commentary until your sermon is done? By that, I mean written.
Right.
You know, you don't have to do it. I guess one of the things, the disciplines, to be more direct to the questioner, and maybe in a way that he wants to be helped, is to say, be judicious in your use of commentaries.
Okay.
Don't think you're supposed to read every commentary on your shelf
yeah.
on every passage you're going to preach.
That's right.
Go to the commentary that might particularly answer a question you have rather than see what they have to say. That's kind of the way I use them judiciously. Do I have a question I want to hear them on rather than just, I know I'm supposed to read all these.
Yeah.
And you're going to use them less.
Yep.
Yeah. I think you hit on the point because some of it is just conditioning, depending on where you went to seminary or how you've been trained. Or
that's right.
You learned how to preach from. You think that the commentaries are supposed to lead the conversation
right.
as opposed to putting your face in the Bible,
right?
You know, turning off the TV,
getting some work done,
studying to show yourself approved unto God,
yeah.
a workman that need not to be ashamed. Now, that's easier said than done, but over time, to your point, I found myself, because I took that advice, I think probably one of the first times I heard you say it years ago, the time that I've built up in the Word has now allowed me to use commentaries less and less because I have fewer questions that I can't answer just by digging into the Word myself. Now, there's some technical things or sometimes I come across a passage and I've done everything I can. I've exhausted every other means. I'm saying, well, man, I wonder what so-and-so says about this types of thing. But I'm going specifically for a question, not for my outline, not for the main point. I've wrestled enough to get that. Now just have a specific question that I'm stuck on.
So let's take the person who asked this question. My guess is they're highly conscientious.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be faithful to the Word. They don't want to teach error. And therefore, they feel like I got to be dependent on all these other helps, really. Mm-hmm. And many of them are helps.
Yep.
But given all that, conscientiousness and fidelity, spot check your work.
Yeah.
Rather than, I liked your thing, rather than let them lead the whole conversation of your work.
Yeah, like doesn't Paul have something to say about this to Timothy?
Go ahead. What does
he say? You hit it. Come on.
Study to show yourself.
There you go.
Approved.
Yeah. Right. It doesn't mean like
I think that goes back to that AI thing we did.
Yeah.
You're supposed to do the study.
Yeah, you do the work. And your job is not to be faithful to the commentators.
But right? It's good to spot check.
It is. It absolutely is. Yeah. And so we should thank God for them because these are faithful men and women who have poured decade of their life into studying a book. I think one of the like things kind of gets to yours, Ed. Like my stance towards the commentaries is important. Like before I open them, the way I view them, right? Like I see the commentators as helpful people to fight with, right? I'm gonna come with my questions to see what the answers are. But I remember early on, I would go to a commentary and I would see that there was in three commentaries there were seven different opinions, and I would freak out.
Yep.
And going, oh no, now I got to read a doctoral dissertation over here, and mm-hmm. I got to, it's 30 hours of work. Instead of being like, oh, you know what? Very smart people disagree. And so that's a benefit to me. That's right. Not a detriment. Yeah.
Now, can I say something to what you just said? I think that to the person who asked that question, person would be helped by realizing that the written commentators are not the only ones you can have a conversation with. There are some live people
that's great
who are working on the Bible too.
Yeah.
And that's
part of
the genius really of the Simeon Trust is the collegiality of working together on text in community.
Yeah. Oh,
because sometimes, and this, not sometimes, I can say this definitively, the time I've spent talking to another brother or in a group talking about the text, 1 hour worth of doing that is like 10 hours working in a commentary.
It's funny because you almost read my mind, because the next question I was going to ask is, do you, and if so, how do you involve lay people in your sermon preparation? So this group you're talking about, are they all like very educated pastors?
Now, no. And again, I got this either from Dave or you, somebody here at the table.
If it's good, it came from me.
Okay. It came from Dave.
No, so, it came from me. We'll see.
So, yes, I meet with my associates, the ministerial staff. We get together to go over the text. But I just started recently. That's within the last few months. Figuring out how to get the congregation. It was you.
Yeah, it was me. That's right.
Oh, it was you. It was you.
You better believe it.
Yeah. Started figuring out a way to get the congregation involved by asking them, okay, I already have printed out, okay, here's what I'm preaching over these next few months.
Right.
But the week before, I'm like, okay, what questions do you have about
there
this text?
Go.
Even in Bible study, I'm like, okay, this is the text we're going to have next week. Would the average person find weird in here or that whatever?
Yeah.
To get them involved and just to get their frame of mind and what a person who's not a Bible nerd, how they read the text.
Because
when I'm with my associates, they're coming up with all kind of esoteric thing. When I bring it to the people, it's like, oh, I never would have thought of that. It's just something real simple that because I'm a nerd, I'm looking at a whole different direction.
Yeah. Dave?
Oh, man. I thought his answer was good. and I thought what you gave was great. I will say that I probably would be helped to implement this again as far as this kind of collegial lay interaction with text on the front side.
Well, you're doing stuff with your staff, right?
We have been, but right, like the last couple months, we've shifted a little bit of our staff meeting. We were not getting that done every time because I felt like our staff meeting had become a Bible study for the preacher preparing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, we got a lot of ministry staffing, church stuff we got to be getting done. So I feel a little guilty on that. Like the last 3 months, I don't have that same communication point.
Okay. I would say, because this sounds like, oh, do I have to have like a big like setup process or whatever? Kind of what you were talking about, Ed. I will, if I'm preaching a text, I'll try to find at least two opportunities to have like a 10-minute conversation. Be like, hey, let's just read. This happens a lot of times when I'm doing one-to-one Bible reading with people at church.
Right.
We're actually reading something else. We're not reading that text that I'm going to preach. We're like, hey, before we do this thing that we agreed we were going to do, I just want you to read this text and first impressions, what's the thing that stands out to you as like the most interesting or strange and the biggest question you've got? Like anybody can answer that question.
Yeah.
And like you said, Ed, they're actually reading it through different eyes, right?
And it triggers good stuff.
Exactly. It triggers really great stuff. Okay. thinking about studying the Bible. Dave, do you have devotion time and study time, like as a separate thing with the Word? Are you reading different things? Or what are the benefits if you do that? What are the pitfalls potentially of doing this kind of, oh, this is my devotional life and then this is my study life?
That's a great question. And it's something I've wrestled with now being in pastoral ministry, you know, 36, 37 years. I will say that I've approached this differently at different times. Mm-hmm. So last year, as you know, I read through the book of Leviticus every month because it's kind of like a one chapter a day kind of book. And I wanted to spend the whole year just myself. I wasn't teaching it. I wasn't preaching it. It was no part of the program of public proclamation. It was personal, spiritual nourishment in the Word. And I loved it. I loved it. So I had a separate reading schedule last year. This year, I don't have a separate reading schedule.
Okay.
I'm in the Word on things that I'm preaching, teaching, and preparing. I will say this, I miss that a little bit. But I would say a few years ago, I really fought against the division of devotional life, sermon prep, that my sermon prep work is devotional. It has to be ministering to my spirit. So I've done different things at different times.
Yeah.
And you kind of got to read your own soul, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, your soul might know that you're just becoming professional and you don't actually sit with Jesus. And if that's where you're at, then by all means, start finding a way just to sit with Jesus. I call it unhindered, unhurried time with my Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be the benefit of doing it.
Good. Ed?
That's excellent. What you just said, I think, is the key, the whole reading of your own soul. Take heed unto yourself and to the doctrine.
Right.
Continue both of them, and you'll save yourself and those who hear you. So for me, part of my heritage in the Baptist church that I came out of and then in the Navigators during college was, you better have devotion, and that's—
Daily quiet time.
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, yeah, daily quiet time, and that's something separate and da-da-da-da. Over time, that has changed. Mm. For me, now in this season of my life, back to what Dave said, I'm more conscious of reading my own soul to figure out, okay, is what I'm preparing to preach feeding this perceived deficiency or this lack of nutrients that I'm recognizing my soul? If, for example, when I was in the series on Ecclesiastes, if what I'm preparing to preach is feeding me sufficiently, I'm getting enough nutrients out of that, then great. Mm-hmm. And then there's a season, and I've just come out of a season where I recognize, okay, what I'm preaching and studying to preach, that's great. But there's something going on in my life, something going on where I need some extra nutrients over here. So for my devotion, I'm working through Proverbs and, you know, doing all of that, not preparing to teach, but because I recognize something in me that is not where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, even Stott once talked about two things that are necessary for the preacher: humility, and then he said experience. And by experience, he didn't mean that you're a good Bible teacher, that you studied well and taught well. By experience, Stott was talking about, do you have a personal experience with the Lord Jesus Christ? If you're losing that, by all means, that's got to be primary. How do you do this? Do you do it separately? Because you're teaching the Bible every day in a variety of contexts.
Yep.
So it gets difficult.
It gets really difficult. So I don't have a separate devotional thing, but I am teaching all the time in different things. I think I don't have it because for a long time, I was under the false conviction that, like, devotion is for the heart, study is for the head. And it was coming out really dry when I was teaching. And then devotions were just kind of like helter-skelter, right? Which I was never a part of. I was just like, this is dumb. I'm not going to do this. Instead of trying to fully invest myself every single time I'm in the Bible. And so it sounds like we're all three in agreement that, like, it's going to shift and change over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what we absolutely are all committed to is study time is devotional, and devotional time is studious, right?
That's right.
That's great.
However much you do, whatever things you read, do not separate those things of heart and soul, right? Yeah. Of mind, all that kind of stuff. Like, love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Like, whatever you're reading.
That's right.
All right, last question.
Ask Ed first this time, will you?
I'm going to. I switch off every time. Don't worry about it. This is kind of just a, this is an interesting question. How do you deal with the fact that people don't seem to talk much about the sermon after church, but will stick around talking about anything else?
Wow. This is a great question.
Yeah.
Because my congregation, they'll stand around for 30, 45 minutes.
Right.
You know, and nobody will say, I mean, I'll take that back. Somebody will say, oh, you know, I appreciated this, appreciated that.
Sure.
So the question is, how do I deal with that?
Yeah.
Well, in the past, I haven't dealt with it well because, because of my own insecurities. I've been waiting for either affirmation or, you know, some type of confirmation or even some kind of feedback. But in this stage of ministry, two things. I take pleasure in the fact that the congregation is healthy enough that they want to hang around and talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Good.
I do not need the affirmation that I needed back when I was younger because I've come to the conviction now that, hey, if I studied well, if I prayed hard, if I did the best I could, if God is satisfied, you all are just going to have to deal with it, however you deal with it, because I'm going to go home and take a nap anyway. But if for some reason I'm sensing that the regular feedback loops that we have as relates to sermon are not giving me what I need in terms of how is this landing, then I'll just go ahead and ask questions.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and be assertive enough to, hey, what blessed you today? Or what didn't make sense? Or what, whatever, that type of thing.
Good.
Yeah, I remember when I was young, there was one time, this was on the front side of the service with people talking about everything under the sun, not the backside, but I was working for Pastor Hughes, and we used to have to walk out as the beginning of the service. We'd walk in from the back, you know, and then you sat in the big chairs in the front, those pharisaical chairs. We sat in the big dog chairs. We sat in that. You knew the service was getting started when everyone came in.
That's right.
So we're standing back there ready to go in, and you could just hear the chatter out there. I mean, people were just, you know, you got 600, 700 people. They're just talking. And the poor guy trying to do the prelude. He's just getting drowned out.
Right, so, for sure. Yeah.
I'm young. I'm 27. I look at Kent Hughes. I go, this is terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, these people should be out there getting ready for worship. It should be quiet out there. And he kind of had his Bible in his hand. He was getting ready to walk through the door, and he had his hand on it, and he looked back over at me, and he goes, David, sure beats the alternative. At least they're out there. And he opened the door, and out we went, right? So I think sometimes we can take ourselves so seriously and that hour so seriously, we forget that these people are people and life is life and they're catching up with one another.
Yep.
And I guess I would say, hey, man, it beats the alternative. At least they're standing around talking.
Yeah.
Right.
As opposed to out the door and gone.
Yep. Yep.
So, hey, if your biggest problem is how do I turn the lights off and get these people to go home?
Hey,
that's a pretty good problem to have to figure out.
Good problem.
Yeah, I would say, so I completely agree with all of that. I would say this to shut it down. Hey, are you giving them anything to talk about? Right? Like, I'm not going to assume that you're not.
Yeah.
But I'm also not going to assume that you are.
That's a good
point. It could be so complicated and convoluted and just up in the air that people are like, I don't even know how to talk about that. I mean, I know I've heard sermons like that where you're just like, well, that was Sunday. I guess we're going to go home. Never when Dave's preaching. But, you know, visiting other
places. Truth be told, it happens.
But I do want to ask the preacher, like, hey, are you giving them something to actually talk about? Mm. Are you actually putting it in their laps, in their hands, so that they could actually work on some kind of application thing? Is there a main point or something they could actually hold on to?
It's great.
So even if you do all that, like you guys are saying, like, man, at least they're there talking. Like, the body of Christ is a family, is a community that, yes, is going to talk about the preaching, but they're also going to talk about, you know, the fellowship meal, and they're going to talk about football, and all that stuff is fine.
And actually, it gets down to edification. So we've never done this. Like, what's the purpose of going to church? But 1 Corinthians 14, I would rather say five words that strengthen or edify or build up someone else than all this worship, individualized, privatized worship. So the point of going to church is mutual edification.
Right.
Here we go. And you got to believe that stuff's going on in those conversations.
All right. So everybody, go to church.
Talk it up.
Hang around.
For For more articles, books, and podcasts, please visit 9marks.org.